Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Barber Marina, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazines, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Troller Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you are dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our store at www.greatloop.org/store. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. I hope everybody's recovering from their holiday. You've had a few days, and you've got another one coming up in a few more days, so be prepared. With us this morning are Steve Cromer and myself, Janice Cromer. For those people that don't know it, there is a continuous waterway around the eastern portion of the United States. It's called the Great Circle Route, and it takes into account the Atlantic Intracoastal, the Hudson River, New York Bay, Hudson Bay. It goes up through Lake Erie and then around the Heritage Canals in Canada, through the Great Lakes, and down the waterways of the United States to the Gulf Coast and back around to the Atlantic Intracoastal on Florida's East Coast. America's Great Loop was formed to give people information and to share the excitement about the loop. Our webpage is www.greatloop.org. And we'd love for you to visit. There's a wealth of free information about the Great Loop that you can take advantage of. And, of course, we'd also like you to click Join AGLCA and become a member. Our guest hosts this week are frequent visitors, Captains Chris and Elise Caldwell from Captain Chris's Yacht Service. Chris and Elise are wonderful speakers, and they come to all of our rendezvous and give presentations. And they also have a charter service where you can actually go on their boat or go on your boat and get real-time experience on how to cruise. Chris and Elise, I'm going to give you the floor.
Good morning.
Today we'll be speaking about dinghies. It's been a popular subject in the discussion forum this week, and we thought Chris and Elise could give you their thoughts on a dinghy. Chris and Elise, welcome.
Good morning, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you.
We're going to talk to you today about what we call dinghy dynamics, and one of the first things that we often hear from people is they're looking for that perfect boat, that perfect cruising boat. So we always ask them to establish what the mission of that perfect cruising boat is, and figure out what it is that they want to do with that perfect cruising boat. Well, before you even think about that, you want to think about your dinghy and plan what kind of a dinghy, how is it going to be on that perfect cruising boat, and there's lots and lots of information that we'll talk about today. Some of the were already brought up on the forum, but we'll give our two cents and our experience with them as well. Yeah, Chris wants to talk to you about one of the seminars that we've done on dinghies.
We've done a lot of seminars at many different national boat shows, including AGLCA rendezvous, both on the East Coast northbound rendezvous and at Joe Wheeler State Park on the southbound rendezvous. We also present seminars at Troller Fest and at the Miami Boat Show coming up this season. One of the seminars that we've had, and this is a cute little story, we were presenting a seminar called Dinghy Dynamics, and a lady walked up to us and said, why should I go to this seminar? There's so many seminars for me to choose from. Why should I go to this one? And I asked basic questions like, what kind of boat do you have? And she said, none yet. So then I asked, well, how many pages of ideas do you want in your perfect cruising boat? And she was very quick to answer, 12 pages. I said, okay, so how many pages do you have on the dinghy to go on your perfect boat? And she just kind of gave me the deer in headlight stare and said, I hadn't thought about that. Said, you need to come to the seminar. So she did. And after the seminar, I asked her, how many pages do you have for your dinghy? And she looked at me with a great big smile and said, 4. Got 12 pages for the big boat and 4 pages for the little boat. So there are a lot of things that you need to consider when you're packaging your perfect cruising boat and the dinghy to go along with the perfect cruising boat.
And one of the first things you really have to ask yourself is, why do you want a dinghy? And some people say, I'm just going to go from marina to marina. Well, if that's truly what you're going to do, and you've used a boat enough to know that is what you continue to do, then you probably don't even need a dinghy. But for many of us who do like to anchor, even if it's only a portion of the time, that dinghy becomes your transportation to shore, to other boats, to little islands, to go shelling, and to just go tootling around and maybe fish a little bit in shallower waters than where you can bring your big boat. So you have to think about, is it important to you to even have a dinghy? And if it is, what do you plan to do with it? So you want to look at how many members are in your crew. If it's just the two of you, you might think, well, I can get a really small dinghy. But how many of us out there who have had dinghies have ever just had two people in it? You pick up your friends from the other boat, or you pick up someone from shore to bring them back to your boat. And so you often will have more than just the two of you. So you might want to consider at least a 4-person dinghy. And be careful, because some of them are now rated for 3.5. And I haven't quite figured out how to get half.
What is 3.5?
Exactly. I think that that's just one of those things that they cover themselves for the weight limit. Because as you know, we've gotten a little bigger over the years. And so what used to be considered 140 pounds per person is now a little bit more than that.
Maybe for your pet. Maybe your dog is coming along and that's the half person.
You know, maybe, but they don't really count that. You could have 4 people and a dog in your dinghy, and you're
really?
Still legal as long as you're underneath the weight limit.
Weight limit.
Yep.
Interesting.
So, you want
Can
to
I just
think
ask a quick question?
Sure.
Do you think a dinghy has any importance as far as safety goes in case something does go wrong and you have a fire or something on your boat?
Well, it certainly is another alternative to swimming ashore. And for those of us who are staying inland all the time and we think maybe we don't need to have a life raft, this then could function in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you purchase the right dinghy, it can be out there in pretty good seas. And that's why we like to have a rib. We'll talk a little bit more in detail to that, but a rib is a rigid inflatable boat, and that's the boats that you see that have look like a balloon around the outside of it.
Don't confuse a dinghy with a life raft. Life rafts have got a lot of specific criteria for being life-saving equipment, and auto-inflation is one. Auto-launching is another one. Many of them have roofs on them. Many of them have drogues to prevent them from flipping over in rough weather. So if you're doing some ocean cruising, a life raft is the proper piece of equipment to get. But if you're just going, and a lot of life raft people may disagree with us, but if you're just going to go from Palm Beach, Florida, only 54 miles to the Bahamas, it's difficult to say, do you need a life raft? It would be nice if you had one, special if you needed it, but a dinghy that's got a quick launch would be, let's say, acceptable. It's a good idea, but make sure that your dinghy is available to launch quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking about life rafts today. We're talking about a piece of utility equipment, a dinghy or a small boat to go from your boat on a mooring ball or your boat at anchor to shore, and that's what we're focusing on today.
So you figure out how many people that you want to put in it. That helps you then figure out how large the dinghy needs to be. And then, once you decide how big the dinghy needs to be, then you want to think about how fast do you want to go. Well, is this your sports car? Because you have a slow trawler, you might want to have something that has a 25 horsepower or 15 horsepower. But most of us can go anywhere from a 3 to a 9.9 and have it do what we need it to do, which is move our boat from an anchorage to shore. because you're usually not anchoring out in the ocean. You're usually anchoring in a fairly protected anchorage, protected cove, and so you're not in serious waters. And you know what else? If you get a little wet as you're tootling along, we call that getting dinghy butt. You just have to bring a change of clothes and a dry bag to put on when you get to shore if you really want to be dressed up. But, you know, most of us, that's what we do. We just tootle along in a 3-horsepower or a 9.9.
I was going to ask what you would recommend to the average Great Looper cruise.
Well, we're not recommending anything. We're trying to open people's eyes so that they can think. And here's our experiences. We have a 10-foot, 2-inch rigid inflatable boat. It's made of PVC. The inflatable part is PVC. It weighs 102 pounds. The boat weighs 102 pounds. And for a very long time, we had a 9.9 horsepower, two-stroke 9.9 horsepower motor. And ourselves, Elise, myself, and our dog, Fred, which was a 95-pound Labrador Retriever, we could plane with that boat. We could do about 12 to 15 miles per hour in that boat, but we would have to do a little bit of weight distribution. Fred was always in the front, and Elise would have to lean forward to get the bow to go down so the boat would plane. So we were struggling with the 9.9 horsepower, but once we got the boat planing, we were okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then if we had 4 people in the boat, then the 9.9 horsepower was wasted money and extra weight that we could not utilize because the boat's not going to go fast. As time goes on and our needs changed, our 9.9 horsepower engine died, so it was time to buy another motor. If we buy the 9.9, we'd relive the same history we had before, and we decided to go with the 3.5 horsepower motor. That was now a 4-stroke motor, a more modern 4-stroke motor, 3.5 horsepower, very lightweight. And since we really could not go fast with the bigger motor, we're fine not going fast with the smaller motor. So that meets our needs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also the option of rowing. But I'm going to tell you, one of these rigid inflatable boats does not row worth a hoot. So if you really want to row your dinghy, you want to find a dinghy that has a hull design that allows you to row in a straight line instead of practically going in circles like you feel like you do in the inflatable.
One other thing I want to touch on about outboard motors is in the United States, we have this ethanol gasoline, which you might remember back in the 70s was called gasohol. But presently, it's E10, ethanol 10%. And they're trying to make it go up to E15. We're fortunate in the state of Florida that we can buy what's called recreational gasoline that does not have ethanol. It's more expensive, but it makes our motors last longer. And by the way, the E10 was what killed our 9.9 outboard. But the newer design motors are designed to use the ethanol, but they don't like it, but they will tolerate it. So in Florida, you can buy recreational gasoline, and any of our listeners that might be in the Arctic North in Michigan or Chicago or even in Canada, your leaf blowers, your snow blowers, your lawnmowers, they all have problems with this ethanol gasoline. So if you're looking at an outboard motor to purchase, make sure that it will tolerate the E10. And if you're in a state like Florida, don't even buy E10. Buy recreational gasoline.
Interesting point. Thank you. I think we'll take a quick break for a minute. Let me tell you about some upcoming AGLCA events. If you are a Gold Looper, we are having a Gold Looper reunion in Hutchinson Island Marriott Resort on January 16th and 17th. And sign up date, again, you must be a Gold Looper, and you need to register by December 31st to get the great rates that they're quoting. Florida during the winter is typically very expensive. They're giving us a rate of $1.50 a foot, which is wonderful. And the hotel rooms at this great resort are only $115. So sign up if you're interested. We're going to have a great time. And then when we get to May, we're going to be able to have our spring reunion, and I'm just trying to find the dates. I have it, I believe it's May 4th, 5th, and 6th, or 6th, 7th, and 8th. I can't put my hands in it right now, but it is on our webpage. It's going to be a great event. We have speakers. Our main sessions will be cruising the geographic area from Norfolk up through Chesapeake Bay, Delaware Bay, New York, and New Jersey. We'll go up the Hudson River to the Erie Canal, and then we will talk about the Trent Severn Waterway, and we'll go into Georgian Bay and the North Channel. Then we'll bring you through Lake Michigan, into our river system through Chicago, and back down to Mobile, Alabama. And we'll go from Mobile around the Florida tip back to the east, to the eastern tip of Florida. Those are the main sessions. We're going to have at least 10 or 12 side sessions, which will be shorter seminars on topics of general interest to boaters. So we're really excited about this rendezvous. It's going to be fantastic. And again, our registration is open on our webpage. We'd love to see you in Norfolk in May. Chris and Elise, do you want to start on where to store your dinghy?
Sure. And before we actually get into that, on the forum on Thursday, we posted a link that you can go to our website and see some photographs of some of what we're going to talk about. It might help make a little bit more sense to you as we talk about some of these dinghies and locations of where you're and how you can store your dinghies. So in addition to the link, if you're just listening to it and you missed out on the forum, if you just go to CaptainChrisYachtServices.com, our website, and click on the side blue bar of seminars, you'll see the dinghy dynamics topic and you can link there. And I hope very shortly to be able to post the recorded version of this radio blog talk, Blog Talk Radio, so you'll be able to follow along and look at those photographs as well. I think it would be helpful for everyone. Okay, so what we're going to go to next is where to store the dinghy. Well, first couple of photos that we have are different types of dinghies, and that's really important for you to figure out if you want the rowing dinghy or if you want one of the heavier ribs, rigid inflatable boats with a center console and all the whistles and bells, or just a basic inflatable, and then how you can store it. Well, one of the first ways that we have for storing it is by lifting it with a davit. And there are a variety of different davits. One that's as basic as a mast and boom with a block and tackle. So you can launch and recover your dinghy from what we call the mother vessel, the big boat. And it depends upon where on your boat you have room to put that. Some people put it on their bow. Some people with newer boats have the option of putting it on an aft deck roof. And some have a trunk cabin to put it on. And I will tell you, the mast and boom with the block and tackle, unless you came from being a sailboater, takes a lot of practice. There's another option that's called a hydraulic controlled swim platform. And that's an addition to a boat. And you don't see it on too many trawlers, although we have started seeing them on some. You see them on a lot of faster boats, like
sea rays,
things like that. And that will allow you to actually lower the swim platform down into the water, and then the dinghy just kind of floats off. But it does add length and weight to your boat. And so you have to actually resize your propellers on the big boat, resize the mothership's propellers so that it will go at a proper angle and a proper speed. Then you have an electro-hydraulic dinghy boom that's all push-button control, very easy to use. And I like to say the guys like it, and they could pretend they were wearing a hard hat and working with a tinker toy, because that's what that reminds me of, having that sort of elaborate process, up and down and in and out and extend the boom out and back. And then you'll see Some boats are rigged for a stern davit, which is another option to lift your dinghy above the swim platform and totally out of the water for a boat that really doesn't have the space to keep it on deck on the boat. But that also will extend the size slip you need to keep your boat in, because they can't have it extending too far outside of your slip. And you have to be careful not to block the name and the hailing port on your transom, because on the transom, you've got your name and hailing port that's got to be visible according to the Coast Guard regulations. And you'll see sometimes people will actually put their dinghy up sideways on their boat, on their swim platform, and they'll write the hailing port on the underside of their dinghy with the intention of meeting the letter of meeting the law, but that doesn't meet the law. You're still covering where your transom is and where the name of your boat is. So you have to be careful about that. Another type of device to store your dinghy with that I've seen a lot of discussion about on the forum of late is called SeaWise, and we have a photograph of that. It provides a hinged outboard motor bracket that keeps your outboard in an upright position as you hinge the dinghy from the horizontal position to the vertical position, and it sits across your transom. The dinghy will sit across your transom, and it does attach to the swim platform, so you have to be careful where you keep your name on your boat, on the mothership, so that that CY system doesn't block the name as it's required by the Coast Guard. But I will tell you, the CY system is easy. I will say it's probably, I have no idea the price. That's one of the things we have to have a disclaimer here. We sell none of this. We don't have any interest in whether you purchase one type or another. But when we've seen this in action, the SeaWise is probably the simplest for anyone to use, and especially if you're afraid of heights, if you don't like to climb up on the roof of your mothership and have to climb up there and look down at the water so far down below. This makes it easy. The very first time we saw the SeaWise operation, it was in Georgetown, South Carolina, and it was a little bitty lady. We've got a photograph of her actually doing it all by herself. She didn't have anybody helping her. You know, there was none of this, well, honey, you've got to do that, and I've got to do this, back and forth. She was just doing it all by herself. It was easy.
Fantastic.
So that's something to consider, and you can see a photograph of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to make sure that your dinghy is going to be easy to use or you won't use it. And it's so much fun to travel around your dinghy and visit places that you wouldn't be able to reach in the deeper draft boat. So another photograph that we have on our site is of chaps. And if you're familiar with cowboy chaps, you know, the leggings that cowboys wear over their pants to protect themselves from the elements, well, the same thing we do on our dinghy. We put a canvas cover just around the balloon, so it protects it from the sun all the time, and it protects it from chafing on the pilings and fixed docks and rocks and things of that sort. And it also protects it from our dog's nails. So that's kind of the basics of how you can store it and how you can get it on and off. And, of course, there's always the option of a real total inflatable where you deflate it and package it up and stick it in your boat somewhere, tucked in a cabinet or something, and then take it out every day. Of course, that's not going to be as sturdy a dinghy as these rigid inflatables are.
Some of the roll-up dinghies, you've got two options. You've got the hard floors, something like plywood that you have to fit in like a puzzle. They're not very fun to deal with, especially on your boat. And the other type has an inflatable floor, which is a very interesting idea, and they've been on the market pretty strong for about 8 years now. And I see a lot of people using those. They just deflate the entire thing. They roll it up, put it in the bag supplied by the dinghy manufacturer, and put it in the lazarette. You just pull it out, pump it up with a big foot pump or an electric pump, and then you you have your dinghy. You're ready to go.
How long does it take to inflate the dinghy, Chris?
With a foot pump, it'll take less than 10 minutes, and the foot pump is pretty large, so it puts in a lot of air volume every time you depress it.
That, of course, some of us have the kind that you can plug into a cigarette lighter or even plug into your regular 110, and that will pump it up even faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're looking for some sort of exercise to get on your boat, that'll have to get a feel, like pretend that you're exercising.
Two other topics that we'd like to cover before we sign off. One is called dinghy etiquette. And the other is the safety gear on board your dinghy. So let's go dinghy etiquette first. And this might sound strange or silly, but when you start cruising and start using your dinghy, pay attention. If you're in a mooring field and you go to the dinghy dock supplied by that mooring field, you'll notice that there'll be signs. It'll say motors up, motors down, or it'll say hard dinghies to the left, soft dinghies to the right. And their intent is to put like boats together. You also should put a long painter. Painter is the name for the bow line on the dinghy. So you may want to use a long painter or a long bow line somewhere in 10, 12, 15 feet because in high season, and we're in high season in Florida in January, December, you can only put about 10 dinghies on the dinghy dock. But you can put about 30 or 40 dinghies on the dinghy dock if you all have 15-foot-long painters. You push the boats out and put yours in, or you crawl into the first boat and then crawl into the second boat and then crawl into your boat.
And hope you don't go splash in between.
I know you're sitting there thinking about you're doing all this crawling around, but once one person gets in your dinghy, then you can kind of push everything around and come back closer to the dock. Get your partner and your groceries and your dog. But while you're doing all this crawling around, keep in mind, are those other dinghy motors tilted up where they might poke you in the face, or are they pointed down where they're not a danger to anyone? So there's a reason for that. Also, they want to keep the hard dinghies in one area because they might have scratchy fiberglass, and they don't want that fiberglass to scratch into your soft balloon on your inflatable boat. So there is an etiquette. Another thing to keep in mind in the Bahamas and in the Florida Keys, stern anchor. So you actually go into the dinghy dock, you tie your bow line on, and then you push, you get your partner off, you get your bags off, push your dinghy backwards, and this is one of the few times you actually throw an anchor. Face it, the anchor only weighs about 6 pounds. So you throw it about 10 feet behind the boat, and the purpose for that is to keep your dinghy perpendicular to the dock so other dinghies can come in. You generally use this procedure where there's a lot of wind or a lot of waves and all the dinghies get bunched up. So a stern anchor is a reality on a dinghy in some areas. Last is safety equipment. Keep in mind your dinghy is a motor vessel. It's got a motor on it. So you still have to follow the U.S. Coast Guard rules and regulations for safety equipment. You have to have a bailer to bail out the dinghy. A bailer can be a cup, but it's got to be on board the boat. So the Coast Guard can say, where's your bailer? You pick up your cup and say, this is it. You could have got it at the restaurant last night. Flares. In the United States, you only need flares on a dinghy less than 16 feet, less than 9.9 horsepower at night. You don't need the flares in the daytime. Lights, your red and green lights and your white lights, your running lights, you only need those less than 16, less than 9.9 horsepower. You only need those at night. Then you ask, well, where do I screw my lights and where do I get the battery because I have a pull start motor? The answer is you go to the boat store and you get these cute little gadgets that look like flashlights with the red and green rings on it. That's your answer. It's Coast Guard acceptable. You have to have it. Carry spare batteries. And then another thing that's required day and night is a sounding device, a whistle. So we have a whistle that we put on each life jacket on board the boat, and we also have one on the safety lanyard, that red curly cord that goes on the kill switch on the outboard motor, we put a whistle on that wrist device so that whistle is readily available if we need to signal another boat to say, hey, look over here, I'm in this little bitty 10-foot dinghy, stay away. So the last thing you need, registration. The motor vessel, so you need the vessel registration, you need registration numbers on the sides of the boat, and you need the decal for whatever state it's registered in. And we carry a dry waterproof box like a Pelican box or an Otter box, and we keep our old driver's license in there as our registration to match that we're the owner of this dinghy. One last thing is a paddle. You need a paddle or an oar to meet all of the requirements. And we just want to wrap this show up by saying these are important. They're not just a tool. They can be a lot of fun. And if you do a lot of anchoring or a lot of mooring, you have to have a dinghy to get to shore.
And don't forget, for those of us who have pets aboard, you definitely want to have a dinghy to bring your pet ashore so that they can go on shore patrol. You're going to meet a lot more people when you go ashore on your dinghy than if you stay on your boat the whole trip. So there you go.
This has been very interesting. Do you have anything else to add, Chris and Elise? I don't want to jump the gun.
One other thing, yes. In some of these photos, in our last photo with our dog Bert in the dinghy, you'll see a white steel cable. We also use a padlock. When we leave the dinghy tied behind the boat overnight because we take Bert on shore patrol in the evening and again first thing in the morning, we have a steel cable with a combination padlock just in case our painter or our bow line chafes and breaks, or if we get some kids playing games. We don't want our dinghy to be missing when we wake up in the morning. So you can go into the boat store and you can get that Lifeline, which is a white vinyl coated steel cable. Make it about 10 or 15 feet long. Put in a loop in each end of it, so that way you can padlock your dinghy to your mother boat.
And if anybody has any other questions, we'll be happy to help you out, either maybe at that rendezvous at the Marriott or online or through the forum. Be happy to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Chris and Elise. Steve, do you have any questions or comments before we close?
Well, the only thing that occurred to me when Chris and Elise were talking about dinghies, I've seen a couple of companies where you can buy a little sailing rig to go on the dinghy. Have you ever seen that?
We have. That would be for a hard dinghy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because these rigid inflatables don't sail very well. They don't row very well, and they don't sail very well. But like the Portland Pudgy and a couple of other
Walker Bays,
they will have a sailing rig that's added to it. And if you like to sail, that's a lot of fun. When we first started cruising, we also had a snark sailboat on our boat because we did like to sail. It was kind of a fun thing. So if you want a multi-purpose, that's certainly something to look at.
There's also a company, Stevenson maybe, that makes catamaran dinghies.
Oh, there's a company in the Pacific Northwest named Livingston that makes a catamaran dinghy.
That's who I was thinking of, yeah. So
they're very good boats, but they're very heavy. We only see those on larger mother boats, like 45, 50 feet and up. So you need the bigger mother boat to store it, and you need a very stout dinghy davit to lift it.
Think about some of our loopers are on older boats like ours, okay? And you have to consider how much weight can that roof take when you're putting a dinghy up there. So you want to figure out how much does it weigh, and can your davit lift that much weight, and will you be, you know, will everything be safe? Will you change the center of gravity, the center of buoyancy on your boat by putting something that heavy up on top of it? So like Chris said, that you see that mostly, those type of boats, mostly on larger mother vessels.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Chris and Elise, for taking some time during your busy Christmas holiday to talk with us. Everyone, our shows are archived on our webpage. They're also archived on blogtalkradio.com, and they're available through iTunes. Have a happy holiday, everyone, and thanks for listening in. Thanks, Chris and Elise.
Thank you for inviting us today.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time by America.